Yeah, I know what episode it is.
All right. I talked myself into that.
Do you know what episode
it
is?
Yeah, it's fucking Brotown over here.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been better if Cruel Intentions was this episode.
That's true. That's a drag. Welcome to the 69th episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck? Where we revisit great movies from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck. That's the only reference I'm going to make to the,
agreed,
to the number.
Thank God you said that. I will say my brain is fried. I just listened to a 3-hour Sam Harris Scott Adams conversation on the way over here. It is bogglingly weird. And I say that because Kaylin has a Scott Adams curiosity.
Oh, that. Oh, right.
Scott
right,
Adams.
Right,
Dilbert
right,
Scott
right.
Adams.
3-hour conversation
it's,
with
you
got
to listen to it. It's nuts. I will
he's
only
the,
say
he's
that.
Awful.
I will only say that as introduction of why my brain is jumbly. But he puts up a fine fight against Sam Harris.
No way.
Yeah. Anyway. Let's
can't wait to listen to that other show.
Yeah, well, I'll listen to it if you don't listen to Sam Harris' podcast.
I started, I was so, all right, reference number two. I was so excited about the number of our episode that I forgot to gather my thoughts.
Well, I can tell you what I'm excited about.
Okay.
Bronson fucking Pinchot is in this movie.
Oh my God.
That's what
I forgot.
That's what I'm excited about is Bronson Pinchot.
Doing a questionable,
questionable
uh-huh. thing.
So wait, just to be clear, our second Judge Reinhold, our second Bronson Pinchot,
and
our
yet
first
Eddie Murphy, our first Eddie
and
Murphy.
Our first Taggart. What's that guy's name? Or our second Gil. What's his name?
Gil.
What's that dude's name?
Don't know.
The African American cop guy, the police commissioner guy.
Huh?
Haven't we seen him in
Reginald
something else?
Vell Johnson?
No, it doesn't matter.
Don't know what you're talking about. But I felt like there was some other stuff to go over. Well, anyway, I can say this, that we're now fully up and operational. The whole archive of our show is back and organized properly.
Yes.
Feel free to listen.
You owe me $5.
That was it. That's what it was.
Yeah,
I owe Travis. That's the old business.
Yeah, you owe me $5.
I owe him five
can
bucks
I
because essentially everybody in Cruel Intentions 3 is naked, which is like,
fair.
Thinking back on
of course
it, what a fucking dumb, like, I'm an idiot.
I was confused by
that bet.
Listening back, I was like, why did he make that
I don't know
bet?
What
of
I was
thinking. Of course
they're
naked in that movie.
Also,
they're in
that's like way, that's many years later, yeah. And they're direct video actors.
I mean,
like,
2000s.
What was I thinking?
Was
nobody's
weird.
Trying to retain their honor on direct-to-video threequels.
No, and they're a cast for their ability to take their clothes off on camera,
yeah,
I think.
Correct.
Do you have the $5?
Yeah, I got it upstairs for you. Oh. One time I was on, one of the very first films I was on, it's hard to call it that, was this movie they were going to shoot in 1 week, literally, a full film, starring the guy who played the alien bounty hunter from The X-Files.
Yeah.
And it was his, like, you know, sort of, he was throwing his own $100,000 party to make a movie starring himself, written by himself, directed by himself.
Tommy Wiseau.
And you can look it up. And I will not reveal the name, but you are perfectly capable, y'all, of listening, of looking it up yourselves. And the reason I bring it up is because this very nice young woman was cast, and there was I'm so glad I didn't spend much time in this world, but she was asked to go into a trailer, which is where the set of the film was, packed with dudes, in order to do a topless scene. And it was a fucking nightmare to be even anywhere within like a mile radius of that in Burbank. I'm sure everyone was like, something disgusting is happening.
Yeah.
But then again, that must be every night in Burbank.
Yeah, that's called One Night in Burbank. That's its own film.
Anyway, we're going to watch, not far from Burbank is Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
And we're going to watch a film about Beverly Hills.
Every time I drive by that police station, I have a little moment.
Yeah.
Now, I really do think about this film a lot.
Here's the truth of it. I'm really glad to hear that, Travis, because I don't think about this film at all.
Yeah.
The only time, I think that this is true. The only time I ever saw it, and maybe I saw it a couple of times this way, was like, you know, Fox afternoon movie, you know, interrupted by commercials, pan and scan. And edited and censored. This is an R-rated film, and I don't think I've ever seen R-rated Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, wow.
Think about that.
That's a big deal.
Think
okay.
about
it. Okay, okay. Because I'm
my
currently
exposure,
thinking about that.
My experience and exposure to Eddie Murphy is almost like my whole – whenever I think of Eddie Murphy, like pre-Nutty Professor or whatever,
right.
I think about Saturday, Sunday afternoon matinees because I watched this that way. Yeah. I watched Beverly Hills Cop 2 that way. I watched The Golden Child that way. That's probably how I saw
Coming
48
to
Hours.
Coming to America, probably.
Probably Coming to America. Like that, that was – I was younger than Eddie Murphy's heyday, so I saw all his shit edited on network television.
And that's really interesting. I am quite comfortable with the back half of this podcast being an Eddie Murphy-centric thing. It's our first Eddie Murphy. I'm very curious
about his
career.
What else is there to talk about? Well, that's not true because I actually know Martin Brest pretty well. But
I think there's some I will express my concern that this might be a bit of a Sandlot situation. I haven't seen it probably in 20 years, but I saw it a bunch of times when I was younger, and I remember really liking it. I remember thinking Eddie Murphy's really funny. This is Eddie Murphy pretty much at the height of his powers, I would argue. He's coming just off of SNL. He's becoming a movie star.
He's done 48 Hours, which have seen and was very surprised at how much I liked it.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that this is the same kind of joy that I got out of 48
Hours. He's, what, 22 here or 23? He's young.
He's crazy young.
Yeah.
And this, so the only films he's done, I think, are 48 Hours and Trading Places.
Right.
And so this is, but this is the breakout, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
he's
like,
finding his
this
legacy.
Is the one where he became like fucking superstar Eddie Murphy. Like, yeah. This is the movie where that happened. And he was a big off SNL, but like, this is the one where it was like,
he's
he is
a massive
and
star.
Here he is forever.
Like, yeah. And I think this does not matter, not worth talking about, but I don't think he was originally attached to this. I think that sort of he came into it. You know, after a couple people had turned it down or whatever.
Right.
But it you cannot think about this time period without thinking about Eddie Murphy.
Right.
So I'm happy to get into it. I'm happy to get into this type of thing. We've done...
Well, and can I say this?
Yeah.
This is actually not about Eddie Murphy, but the comedy action film, its heyday was this period in the 80s.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Oh,
so,
great.
Perfect, yeah. No. I was going to compare it to some of the other movies, the diehards and things we talked about. But I think this more pure comedy action, sort of Lethal Weapon style, whatever thing is here. And this is not buddy cop. This is comedy
right.
action. It's important right. to sort of segregate those. This is a one-hander with a little Taggart, Judge Reinhold backup,
right.
as I recall.
Right, right.
So I can't wait to spend some time with 1984 Eddie Murphy.
This will be, to me, this is, I'm looking at this not with nostalgia, but I want a time machine to this moment in American history.
This feels like it might be that.
I mean, is there, would you, in your memory, I know it's been 20 years or whatever, but this will be the first time either of us have watched this after living in Los Angeles. I'm also, you know, I get very excited these days about LA movies.
Yeah.
Do you think this has any value as far as that goes?
Good question. I don't know. I do remember the first time I was in the Man Chinese Theater in a movie that showed the Man Chinese Theater on screen.
Right.
That was a really weird moment.
Oh,
that's
wow.
I have to say.
I've never done that.
Yeah.
That sounds exciting.
It was weird. I just thought, oh, they're showing the building I'm currently in. What a meta weird thing that's happening. I don't think that'll happen here.
Well, but certainly we've been to places that are going to be in this film.
Yeah, I definitely have not watched this since I moved to LA. I think it's going to be a nice time capsule. I think it's going to be a nice Eddie Murphy time capsule based on what his career has become. And I think it's going to be a nice genre of film that we don't necessarily have access to today.
You know what? Maybe it's because of this division in my life, but I think in my head there really are two men, both of whom are named Eddie Murphy, but they are very different people.
Absolutely.
And where does that, like, I want to look at this movie to see, like, weirdly, the Eddie Murphy I'm most familiar with, the Eddie Murphy who's been with us from by far the vast majority of our life, is the other guy.
You know what's weird about that? I don't have that Eddie Murphy. I have Beverly Hills Cop 1 and 2, probably 3 somewhere in there. I have Trading Places. I have Coming to America. I have SNL. I don't have any of the other films. I haven't watched any of them.
Well, of course you have.
I have Dreamgirls.
Yeah. But you've seen Nutty Professor.
No, I haven't.
You've never seen Nutty Professor?
I'm telling you, I don't have access to the other Eddie Murphy. I was never interested in it.
Wow.
So I really, I'm being serious. I don't have access to the Eddie Murphy that you're talking about. I completely concede that it's true and that that guy exists. But I only have access to good Eddie Murphy in my
life.
Well,
yeah, I I don't, and I have not experienced or examined, other than this one viewing of 48 Hours, the young phenomenon Eddie Murphy with any adult intellectual
God,
focus.
I think he's great. I really, I'm hoping I'm right. I think he's great. I think it's transcendent.
What is it? Before we watch the film, how do you define why he's great?
Nothing but charisma. I really think this is a guy who leaps onto this scene with a complete sense of who he is, what's funny about him, what he brings, and it's just the most charisma. I remember thinking, oh, this guy is what charisma means. This guy is likable and charismatic, and of course you like this guy. Mm. I don't know someone before this who exuded it in this sort of exacerbated...
Are you talking about a man, like a guy, like screen charisma? Like,
I mean, personal charisma. And I would even go so far, this may be contentious, but I would even go so far, I think Kevin Hart works too hard at it for this to be what I'm talking about. Kevin Hart, I think, has charisma, but it's sort of calculated and forced, and you can feel the muscles moving. I remember this Eddie Murphy as being effortlessly charismatic, where you just liked him, and he was funny, and he was you could embrace what he was doing.
Can I ask you something? And this is not me being contentious, but it's something that has always stuck with me.
Be contentious.
Well, I don't want you to take offense at this question.
When have I ever taken offense at a question you've asked?
Well, buckle up.
Okay, all right.
I once was watching a storytelling show in L.A., and I believe it was and it was this host. And the host said, the next performer is one of the most charismatic performers I have ever seen. And I watched. Maybe I should bleep that. Maybe I don't want to say this. Well, whatever. I watched him react and go charismatic. And I suddenly, he didn't define it any further, but I took it as, I have heard that as a way of saying black presence, actor, performer.
Really?
Yes.
You equate charismatic
with
race.
I don't, but I saw him react that way to a white host, and he was like, and the white host did not get it, and I was like, I was watching him react to that word as being like, that is something people say, which categorizes often amusing or funny black actors. Charisma.
Is that a generally accepted thing?
I don't know. I never heard it before. Well, I just saw him react that way, and he was very. But he like found it amusing in a way where it was like this. God, this is a fucking a minefield for us to be talking about. But
no, let's talk about
but
it.
I saw it, and
I'm
was
not,
like,
first of
"Whoa,
all, I'm
what
not
is
offended.
That?" Okay, good.
Second of all, I just never heard it before. But thirdly, I use that word quite often, and I don't think there's any sort of racial balance to it.
I wouldn't have raised it at all unless you brought up Kevin Hart. And I was like, you're talking about two comedic black actors who are not dissimilar in terms of their personas on screen. But that's, I was just like, oh yeah, that suddenly
made
me remember.
Well, it's likability. And to me, like, for example, Jack Black would be maybe an alternate comparison.
Would you say?
No, I wouldn't. Right. Because he doesn't exude likability.
Right.
He exudes energy. And that's sort of different.
Right.
I instinctively like certain people.
Is there, this is not a challenge, is there a white actor who you would go
comedy
like,
actor?
That is a charismatic person?
Martin Short.
Martin Short?
Yeah. I find him so charismatic. I find him so interesting. Okay. Billy Crystal, Steve Martin. I would say that genre of actor I'm pretty into, and I would probably... I have described Steve Martin as, like, ultimately charismatic before. I feel what you're saying, though. I know... I'm tapping into what you're saying in terms of the popular culture in that word,
right.
And I think there's something there.
That's how I felt when he did that. When
yeah,
he reacted
I get
that
it.
Way,
I, totally
I was
get
like,
it, man.
Ooh, I see the sting of truth there.
Do you not think Martin Short's charismatic?
I would never use that word. I mean,
do you think he's charismatic?
I guess.
What one adjective?
Here's the thing.
Here's
what I think of. Charisma means, and maybe this is a loaded word too, cool.
I don't think I'm using it that way. Wait, before we move on, what one adjective would you use to describe Martin Short?
Goofball.
First of all, goofball, not an adjective. But don't worry about it. Goofy is the adjective version.
But that's not, I would call him goofball.
Esque.
He's acting goofball.
Oh, okay. That went down a weird hole. All right. I find him very likable. I mean, especially in the Three Amigos sort of era. But
you know what? But here's the thing. When you say charismatic about Eddie Murphy regarding Beverly Hills Cop, I get it. I would not call Eddie Murphy in Nutty Professor. I wouldn't even call Eddie Murphy in Coming to America charismatic. He's doing more of a performance. He's doing more of a character.
I completely agree. I think what I'm responding to is I think we're seeing Eddie Murphy here. I think right. in Beverly Hills and Cop specifically.
And so to that point, Martin Short never plays a Martin Short. He plays wackadoos, like total freaks.
I think in Little Me, I mean the Broadway show, he does a one-man show on Broadway that's very charismatic. That's basically Martin Short.
I have no idea what
it doesn't matter. Listen, guys, it doesn't matter. I would say Steve Martin has played versions of himself before. This is, by the way, wrong hole to go down right now for Beverly Hills Cop. what we've learned is that Travis has racial prejudices about Eddie Murphy.
Systemic racial prejudice.
Which is, listen, quite possible.
Yeah.
I don't think it's in terms of the word charismatic. I acknowledge that the systemic racial prejudices exist within my body.
This is ridiculous. Let's not make the show two white guys trying to...
I didn't want to do any of this.
I didn't mean to either. I made a mistake.
Well, it's a 69th episode. We're either going to go down like a weird sex rabbit hole or a racial stereotype rabbit hole. So I guess we went down one of them.
The focus of this is I am very, very thrilled to go watch Beverly Hills Cop because I feel deeply unfamiliar with it. Even though I have seen it-ish, I think it's a blind spot for me. And so I'm really eager to sort of start. I'm happy I'm seeing it first unfiltered at this age because I feel like I can see something more clearly.
I have worries about it. I'm worried it's not going to be what I remember. What word would she use to describe Eddie Murphy in this film?
I don't know. I mean, I don't remember it well enough to know the answer to that. But I think, I mean, like, when I think of this era Eddie Murphy, I think movie star. He's a massive movie star, which maybe is what charismatic
isn't
means.
Isn't the word that everyone uses to describe Tom Cruise as charismatic? Isn't that the word you always hear associated with Tom Cruise?
Is that what you would say?
I wouldn't say that. No, but I hear that word all the time.
I would say movie star.
That's what got me to Tom Cruise. Yeah. Is that I think. Well, who else is a movie star? But I honestly do hear that word all the time with him. But I don't think that.
I would like to investigate this idea of movie star also, by the way, not to take us away from the charisma conversation.
Well, that's what happened with – this is going to go way off the rails for a second. But when I saw Wonder Woman, I just don't think Gal Gadot is a movie star. And that's the best phrase I could use to describe it. People said, what was your issue with that? I thought the movie was great. It was fine. I was happy to see it. I enjoyed it. No major issues with it. But I don't find Gal Gadot to be a movie star. And I can't put my finger on what it is beyond that.
Do you think Chris Pine is a movie star?
No.
Do you think Chris – Evans is a movie star?
No.
Me neither.
I mean, this is the thing. There's very few people I think, oh, that guy's a
fucking
star.
Who's another one?
That's not a movie star?
No, that is.
Oh, see, I got to think about it. I do think Tom Cruise is a movie star. I think Eddie Murphy is a movie star. There are people I've seen where I'm like, that guy's a fucking star.
I think there's – I honestly – I've thought about this a lot. I believe in my –
Oh, you know what?
That there's two movie stars alive right now.
Well, I agree that alive now, maybe, but I remember the last time I had this reaction. I saw Tigerland.
Oh, and you thought that guy's got it?
I said, who the fuck is that guy? He's a movie star.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's happened to me in the last 20 years where I go, oh, that's clearly
a movie star. Well, we don't make movie stars anymore. We don't really promote them as movie stars. Yeah. I mean, people are trying to do it with Chris. What's that guy's name?
Hemsworth?
No, the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, Pratt.
Pratt.
Yeah, he's not a movie star.
No, he's not a movie star. But you know who you know who the two are? It's Tom Cruise and Denzel Washington are the only two living movie stars, in my opinion.
Well, Meryl Streep?
Movie star? She's an incredible actress. She a movie star?
When I see her, what are we talking about right now?
Hey, hang on. Hey, we're going to go watch Beverly Hills Cop.
All right, bye.
May I help you?
Yes, you have a reservation for an Axel Foley.
Well, let's see. I'm sorry, I don't see anything under that name.
Check Rolling Stone magazine's Axel Foley. That's what it is.
Okay. No Rolling Stone, no Axel Foley. I'm sorry, sir.
Oh, it's all right. You guys probably just made some kind of mistake with reservations. Why don't you just give me another room now, go up and go to sleep?
I'm sorry, sir, but there are no rooms available.
Don't you think I realize what's going on here, miss? Who do you think I am, huh? Don't you think I know that if I was some hotshot from out of town that pulled inside here, and you guys made a reservation mistake, I'd be the first one to get a room, and I'd be upstairs relaxing right now. But I'm not some hotshot from out of town. I'm a small reporter from Rolling Stone magazine that's in town to do an exclusive interview with Michael Jackson that's going to be picked up by every major magazine in the country. I was going to call the article, Michael Jackson is sitting on top of the world, but now I think I might as well just call it, Michael Jackson can sit on top of the world just as long as he doesn't sit in the Beverly Palm Hotel because there's no niggas allowed in there.
Excuse me, sir. It seems that we do have a last-minute cancellation. There is a room available. It's a suite, but I'll only charge you the single room rate.
Thank you. I'm sorry I got upset. It's probably from jet lag or something. I'm very tired.
I understand,
What's
sir.
What's the rate, anyway?
That'll be $235 a night, sir.
Fine.
And that'll be suite 1035.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. If Michael called, tell him what room I'm in.
We're back in.
All right, we watched Beverly Hills Cop. Although I don't know how to do this without saying it's been a very long time since we watched Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, it has.
So it feels a little bit like we're starting over, or at least starting a new episode. Mm-hmm. But I really want to not feel that way as much as we can for the listener. But I have to say, we have to acknowledge that just because I don't really remember what we talked about, except that we very awkwardly walked towards some racially sensitive ideas, or like where I felt like sort of awkwardly expressing some anxiety racially.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy you brought it up. I was interested by the topic. You know, I want to do some hard self-work.
Hard self-work.
I did go down another Martin Short rabbit hole just because I got obsessed with the idea of him. And I stand by.
He defines charisma. Yeah.
I thought you talked me out of it after the podcast. I was like, maybe he's not. And I went back. He totally is.
No, that's not it. He is. But the first thing you would say about Martin Short isn't my. Well, how charismatic.
I don't know. I think I might. And I know that.
So odd.
I know that his thing now is Jiminy Glicked up, like, you know, character-y stuff. And well, sure, you know he what? Does.
But
that,
here, okay. Actually, I'm gonna walk down this rabbit hole with you because I am interested in. I did think about the fact that Eddie Murphy was truly introduced to audiences doing characters.
Yes.
And that is strange to me.
And if you know Raw and Delirious, those are all over Beverly Hills Cop. Those characters and those jokes are all over Beverly Hills
Raw
Cop.
Raw and Delirious is not characters. That's
he
just...
No, he does characters. His dad's voice when he's drunk.
Right.
That's in Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh.
His white man voice he does.
Right.
That's in Beverly Hills Cop.
Right.
His gay quote-unquote character is in Beverly Hills Cop. The stand-up is all over the movie.
Right. Which I is see. Interesting. Very interesting. So, yeah. That also reminded me to ask you. You were so into SNL.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch a lot of Eddie Murphy on SNL?
Although, because of the way I watched SNL, I didn't watch it obviously live when he was on it.
Right.
So I got introduced to SNL Eddie Murphy after I knew Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
So the order was wrong.
Okay.
Can I just litigate one thing before we get into the film?
You don't want to wait till the end?
No, I want to litigate this one thing right now.
All right.
Just because you lied to the listeners, and I just want to clarify.
This is the wrong place. I know. This is the wrong place.
I have
to
it pulled up though, and I don't want my phone to lose it.
All right.
So there was some accusations levied against me last week on Does Your Favorite Song Suck? I just want to clear the air, and I don't want Kalen to interrupt me on this. And I just want to say that Kalen said that we missed last week, our first time missing an episode, because I was at a 3-day fish show.
It's true.
Okay. So I just
all those things are true.
No, part of it's true.
That's
I was at a 3-day fish show. That's true. And it's still going on, by the way, which we can get into off air.
Can I ask you a question before you carry on?
I just want to say this thing.
Would we have recorded this show?
All right.
During those 3 days?
No.
That's
because,
not true.
Because we had a time scheduled to record this, which was 7 o'clock on Tuesday. And I said, I can be there anytime that night. And you said, that's going to work. 7 o'clock is cool. Yeah. And you said, okay, you know what? Things are kind of crazy here. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
And then at 7:30, here's a text record. Yeah. How's it looking? Says Travis.
Yeah.
Kalen, I think we pulled the shoot on this one this week. It's feeling too hard to me right now.
Yeah.
And I wrote back, all good. I know you're just doing this so you can talk about fish.
Well,
so I called this ahead of time.
Yeah,
and you just lied to the audience.
No lies. No Kalen. Lies at all. Because I knew that you had said basically, we have to do this right now in this tiny little window of time.
No.
You did.
You picked Tuesday at 7. I had said, here's 3 days I'm
because,
free.
But that was because you were leaving the next day and you were going to be gone.
On a wild musical ride.
For days and days and days. And so I was limited by the options to this one tiny little window of time. That tiny little window of time turned out to not work because I was having family crises. From.
I understand. I was having musical crises. So I took 3 days. You took 3 days.
I was,
and
all,
podcast,
I was raising it to say was, this is what happened.
Oh, Caleb.
This is what happened. Now, if you wanted to go, if you were doing the intro to that episode, and you said we missed this week because Kaylin's family was in crisis. Not very funny.
I wouldn't have said.
Also true.
I wouldn't have said anything.
But I would
about
have
that.
Also been like, well, darn it. I have to say that that is true.
It's been a bad
so
run
your thing,
for you, I think. Just so lying your, to listeners. Also, Kaylin hasn't paid me the $5 that he owes me from the previous podcast.
Well, all right. Instead, I spent it on Beverly Hills Cop.
Okay. All right. That's all I had to say about that.
So we're going to, we'll revisit all this.
No, no need.
We'll
okay.
revisit it all. Because I want to know about fish, and we can't talk about that right now, because that would be the whitest possible thing to discuss when we're trying to dig deep into our feelings about African-American bias.
I will say, I saw zero African-Americans at the fish concert.
Of course you
did. And it
was
at Madison Square Garden over 3 days.
Of course you did. So here's the other thing I wanted to say about all this, though, to get us back on track. What I remembered was... I had, to reiterate, I had essentially no experience with Eddie Murphy movies other than just vague awareness and watching them on TV, you know, network TV. But I did love from a much earlier age than I was introduced to Eddie Murphy, the movie Do the Right Thing. Mm-hmm. And Do the Right Thing has this genius scene that I only remembered much long after that intro that we recorded, where Spike Lee is trying to get John Turturro to explain why he's so racist. Mm-hmm. And he says, but all your favorite people are black. And he says, Prince is black. Michael Jackson's black. Eddie Murphy's black. And John Turturro's point when his response to that is, yeah, but those people aren't black. Mm. He's like, they're more than black. They're different than black. And I remember that in the context of what I was feeling when I saw that stand-up say... react weirdly to the word charisma. Mm-hmm. And what I was reminded of, not because you have any racist impulse or tendency or even systemic racism,
let's acknowledge we all have systemic racism.
Well, for sure.
That's important.
But and that's what we should talk about, because like I thought of that and like, oh, like that's why for me charisma bumped is I was reminded of that feeling of somebody being like, this word gives a famous black person permission to be accepted in the white world.
It's possible. You know, I don't know
if that's true. But when we talk about Eddie Murphy just as a guy, surely that is true in terms of how he was celebrated as a movie star by white people.
What I don't think it is, and I'm cautious of this because I don't know the answer to this, but I don't think it's the same as he's very well spoken, which is like that's an obvious thing that white people do.
No, it's very different than that.
And I'm struggling with this because I do think, especially after watching the film, that charismatic is the right word. Now, the racial part component of it, I was unaware of, and that's certainly a possibility, especially if people react negatively to it, which we should be aware of. But I have to say that's the right adjective. After watching the film.
Well, yes, I know what you mean. Although having watched the movie now, I would say probably if asked, the first word
I'll
that would come
him.
To mind. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, what's the one word you'd use to describe Eddie Murphy in this film?
Natural.
Martin Short.
Martin Short. Yeah. Clifford.
Short-esque. Yeah.
Glickish. Natural. Like, what's amazing about this movie is...
I sort of disagree. I get what you're saying. I sort of disagree.
You disagree with that word?
I do, in terms of him. I know exactly what you're saying, but he is so above natural in this film. He's so hyper-natural. He's so... If you met someone like that in real life, you would lose your mind and you'd never forget meeting them. I know what you're saying, but it's not the naturalism that gets you. It's the effortlessness of the naturalism.
Okay,
effortless, and I would call that charisma.
Effortlessness, same thing. But comfortable, comfort. Like,
comfort I really
but buy. I would never say that word. But yes, that is probably a better definition of it. Because what he does in the movie, which is I've texted Travis like 40 minutes into the film, maybe 30 minutes in the movie. And I was like, I think this is like one of the best movies we've ever watched. And I don't feel that way all the way through the film, mm-hmm. coming out the end. But what I was feeling in that first act or so, essentially the whole Detroit sequence, That's where it is, Detroit?
Yeah, Detroit.
I was like, Jesus Christ, like there's no jokes happening, but this is exactly as entertaining as The Greatest Comedy, which makes it a comedy. Like, it was so weird because nothing that happens is like joke funny. He's just the center of everything. He is just the life force of this entire movie. And the things that are happening are very basic. Some of the other actors are really cool, but they're not like magnetic or this easy, charming guy. And yet he does all this stuff and it makes it feel funny. And I was like, this is making me like rethink and redefine the entire concept of funny.
Yeah. I get you.
And maybe that's charisma. Maybe that's the word.
I laughed out loud maybe 10 times. I don't do that in films. I watched it by myself. I laughed out loud by myself maybe 10 times.
He makes...
And none of them on the page were that funny.
No. Nothing. Yeah. In fact, when there's a written joke, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, the written jokes are terrible. The directing is incredible. The acting is fantastic. And his performance is amazing. He makes funny a scene that I'm convinced was never funny before and has never been funny since.
Which one?
Which is when he's checking into the hotel and he starts freaking out about how they won't allow a black person to stay at the hotel because he's there to interview Michael Jackson for Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
And it's so specific and it's just incredible.
Yeah.
And he gets what he wants by sort of pulling, you know, a race card, which is like the way he does it, because you know that, like, somehow you feel you know that guy and you just are with him and you want to be him.
It's incredible that this script existed before his attachment, because so much of it feels so Eddie Murphy specific in terms of, so the idea, we'll do the plot very quickly. It's very simple, but he just slips into scams. The entire movie, he's like, he sums up the situation. He looks quickly at the person, knows what'll work, slips into a character and does it.
Well, that is a brilliant, great. That's a genius idea for a character, which is a cop who's actually a scam artist. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how he does his cop work, is by scamming people. And it's, that's such a funny and crazy and brilliant idea.
And
it's never even commented upon.
I mean, that's the idea. Let's just go right into the plot, because the basic idea is he's a cop from Detroit. And we can do the sort of plot in a second, but he gets to Beverly Hills, where those cops follow things by the book. So you have this cop who legitimately arrests bad guys and is a very, very good detective. But he's thrown into a situation where when you have to follow the book, you neuter him of all his superpowers.
Yeah, but nor is he appropriate in Detroit. Like, they're always mad at him for pulling these weird cons and scams and getting into more trouble. That's just who he is. Like, I don't think it's one world into another world.
But that's the kind of idea, though, is that they put him
into a different... They're just more straight-laced.
That's right. And it is a sort of fish-out-of-water, different world thing he goes into.
Sort of. Although every time you think that the movie will be that, it pulls way back. Like, we talked a lot during the intro about, like, ooh, this will be cool to see it as an L.A. movie.
Nope.
Like, there's nothing about it. Like, there's one or two scenes where he's in a rich place, which is Beverly Hills. But nothing about the environment.
Surprisingly little.
There's nothing. Like, he sees some people wearing the clothes that he will later wear in his stand-up, which is like, people have commented on that before. But like,
he walks
and
past
he laughs
a guy in a
them.
Red jumpsuit, a red leather jumpsuit, and a black leather jumpsuit, which are his exact outfits from those stand-up specials.
And he laughs like, these clowns.
Idiots.
Yeah. But that's it. Like, that's almost the only thing in the whole movie that's specific to Beverly Hills. What I was worried about when we were talking about Bronson Pinchot playing a caricature, not really.
Agree. He's actually fucking great.
Yeah, he's fine. He's just not the guy. He's just a guy who he meets. And he doesn't even think he's that weird.
No, he underplays I think he's very funny. I think Bronson Pinchot, again, very funny.
The star of our podcast.
I really love him. I love Bronson Pinchot.
He's a real utility player.
But he knows his part and plays his part in that movie. Also, we're getting introduced to a fucking spectacular Judge Reinhold and the guy, Taggart, from Midnight Run.
If I had one complaint.
Judge Reinhold?
Yeah.
He's so baby-faced and cherubic.
Yeah, but at what point do you have to say that's bad? he's playing.
I grant him every ounce of his.
How many years between this and Fast Times?
I don't know.
One, zero, very few.
Right.
He is the exact same person, and it's a very different character.
He's not a good actor.
But I think he's terrible.
No, I think he's so fun in this movie. I
know
I
what you mean. Like, he's a nice color, but I was like, what? That's your only color?
Of course, but you cast the right guy in the right role. That character is dopey.
I don't know. I was watching. Cherubic fella. You really believed, Travis, that dude could be walking down the street? Or does he only exist as a Judge Reinhold performance?
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do you care?
Yes.
I don't care.
Yes, here's why I care. Because the other cops and bad guys and whoever else in the film are 1,000% natural believable, including fucking Mike Ehrmantraut.
Well, Mike Ehrmantraut rules. He's
incredible.
Here's a question for you. So Mike Ehrmantraut from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul is in this movie as a very young man, very unattractive. I asked my girlfriend this. Would you rather... would you rather do old Mike Ehrmantraut or young Mike Ehrmantraut? And she was stymied by that question. It's a real tough one.
So you're asking me that
question?
Yeah,
I'm asking you that question.
Oh, I'll take him young.
Really?
I mean, I don't like him better.
I went old the whole way. I was like, old Mike Ehrmantraut's a better
I'd take pretty much anybody young. Okay. There's gonna be some gross stuff going on.
I'll take everybody young. here's the plot. So speaking of Mike Ehrmantraut.
Don't forget this fucking Judge Reinhold
thing. Okay, we can finish it off. We can finish it off.
I just don't think he fits. That's all. I mean, we'll just talk.
All right. Well, I loved
guess
him.
We're done.
I loved him. I thought he was so cute. I just wanted to like.
Would you rather fuck young Judge Reinhold or old Judge Reinhold?
Young. That's a dumb question. Of course, it's young. Of course, the answer is young. You idiot. Young Judge Reinhold is a goddamn cuddle
the
fest.
The answer is always young.
No,
so,
yeah. You got to cuddle that guy. Eddie Murphy's a Detroit police officer, opens in a sting he's running with no one's permission. He's basically co-opted a truck of cigarettes that was like a, you know, in evidence for the police department, and he's running a scam.
You're so right. I didn't even think of how many characters he plays in the movie.
Movie. Yeah.
But that's not... I never thought of those as anything but this guy, which I feel like makes it such a beautiful performance because
that's right.
He starts out playing a character, but you know, okay, that's Eddie Murphy doing a thing. It's not like the movie tricks you into thinking he's like some criminal. Mm-hmm. And so all the way through, that just is who he is. He's a guy who plays people to get through scenarios.
You know what?
Like, I'm sort of confused right now because I've never thought to myself like, oh, here's some Eddie Murphy shtick. I'm like, this is that character. He's a good actor. He's a fucking great actor.
That's right. And what's great about that in terms of his stand-up, if you know his material, there's like 7 or 8 characters. You go, oh, I know that bit. I know where you got that voice because I know the bit it comes from.
Wow.
But it never takes you out of the film. Having knowledge of that, pre-existing knowledge of that, never detracted from my enjoyment of the film because everything felt like that character. You're right.
And I mean, like, I've seen other Eddie Murphy movies where he feels more... This is strange, and I hope this doesn't tread in some controversial water, but like when I was thinking of Beverly Hills Cop, I was thinking more about Golden Child or Coming to America or something, where I think Eddie Murphy is being aggressively projecting movie star Eddie Murphy-ness. Mm-hmm. And this movie, I was like, no, he's just Axel Foley. He's the character called Axel Foley.
Comfortable and effortless.
Yeah, and I believe 1,000,000% that guy, Axel Foley, exists in the world. And so how do I square that with the feeling that he was also playing the personality? He was a movie star. I mean, he was Eddie Murphy. People went to see Eddie Murphy in that movie. Mm-hmm. And that's it threw me how good he is.
Well,
that's the
reason it's a breakout. Whenever you pair an actor with their perfect role, it lets them do everything they can do. It's a breakout role, and Eddie Murphy gets to do Eddie Murphy here, and it works. And I'm not saying that you ever spot that it's Eddie Murphy.
That's really smart, actually. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, this is him doing all the stuff he does and understanding why he's brilliant. And I would say, like, if you want to understand why Eddie Murphy's a movie star, this is the film you watch.
Yeah, and it's not as good a movie as 48 Hours. It's mm-hmm. probably I don't know, I don't remember Coming to America that well, but like, he's probably done better films in general, but this movie, and this, we'll talk about it, it kind of peters out, but like, it is so, it, what Travis said is right, is like, this is the movie that you should look to when you want to know what Eddie Murphy could do and what people were seeing when they elevated him to be one of the biggest movie stars in the world.
Just because our podcast has a random assortment of films done in a random order, I just want to reference Cruel Intentions for a second and just say that what I thought, Part of me wanted from Cruel Intentions was a guy who summed up, who like Ryan Phillippe's character, who could walk into a situation, know what someone wanted, who they were and what they needed, and become that person in order to get what he wanted. Those are the kind of scams and stuff I wanted from Cruel Intentions. I got zero of that. Watching this made me realize this is the thing that I wanted to see, is someone who walks in and in half a millisecond, he's like, I know exactly what to do here. I know which character to be. I know how to play it. I know where to go. And right. he does it over and over and over again in this film, but it never gets boring. It's always fucking delightful when he does it.
Yeah, and I don't know why I never thought. I know that I've just completely derailed the plot synopsis, but
that's what our podcast does. That's what
we do. Derails. But I'm sitting here right now thinking about the Eddie Murphy movies from the latter part of his career, which is now the majority of his career, really. The ones that I like are Nutty Professor and Bowfinger. And
I have seen Bowfinger.
In both of those films, one of the things he's doing is a impression of himself at his most egomaniacal and a sincere, simple character, sweet character. And what I am thinking now to myself as I think about those movies is, once again, like, this guy might be one of our best actors. Mm-hmm. Because when you think about him inhabiting a character, especially in Nutty Professor, he's not Eddie Murphy. He's that guy. He's the fat guy, you know, the professor guy, and the professor who becomes a cool guy who's then a satire of Eddie Murphy in the same way that Jerry Lewis's movie was. Mm-hmm. But that's I'm sort of stunned that I never realized that he was such an essential and important actor. And it makes me suddenly understand, even though I never possessed this nostalgia, why people lament that he doesn't make good movies most of the time, 99% of the time.
That is the tragic part of this film, watching it. You just think, I could watch this guy forever and be so content with it. I was not flagging in this movie. All the shtick was great. I was into every second of it. I mean, not the movie, but Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
So anyway, so here's the plot. So he's a Detroit detective. Opening sequence, which is great and cool and funny, is a big car chase through Detroit. Gets his comeuppance from the police guy, his boss, and you understand, oh, he's a rogue cop, but he's good. He wants to, you know, get the bad guys, and so he has his own way of doing it, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And he's known for this in Detroit. And his friend comes in who he knows because he used to be a con man. You kind of find out he used to run in the streets with this guy who fell in bad luck, and they're hanging out and sort of reconnecting. And he can't believe that Axel Foley became a detective. He's a cop. It's crazy. This guy's still a lowlife kind of guy, but he's got these German bank bonds on him. And he says, I'm going to tell you about this thing going on in Los Angeles. I work at this art gallery, whatever. He gets assassinated by Mike Ehrmantraut. And then he goes to Beverly Hills to find the killer of his best friend. And he
finds a clue, which leads him back to Beverly Hills.
And then the plot unfolds from there, basically.
And then he catches the bad guys. He meets them right away. He mm-hmm. basically interacts with Mike Ehrmantraut and his boss. And so he's like, okay, cool. Those are the bad guys. And then he spends 45, 50 minutes catching them.
And basically the way they introduce the, what's Taggart's name in real life? He's from Midnight Run.
I don't remember.
Yeah, he's awesome. You've seen him around. He's a guy. And the police chief in Beverly Hills, after he gets thrown through a plate glass window, when Axel Foley gets thrown through a plate glass window, for he goes straight to the bad guys, like, hey, I think you killed my friend. Like, he's unafraid, and the plot just moves. The police chief is like, okay, I know that you're a detective from Detroit, you know, but if this happens again, we're going to, you know, have a hard time here. So I'm going to have these two cops follow you, tail you around. And it's Judge Reinhold and Taggart. And it's awesome. And then they're kind of this bumbling buddy cop duo that he gets to play with. And
trio, really. Like, you think, at least I thought, that he and Judge Reinhold had a lot of scenes. I would say Taggart has the same number of scenes. Like, they're basically
I'm saying they're the duo, yeah.
But those two are the
That's
duo.
Correct. They're a bumbling cop duo. Axel Foley, you know, plays with them a little bit or whatever.
Right.
And there's some cop tropes and whatever. And then it becomes this cool little action film. And Eddie Murphy has to use all his wiles and his...
it's a lot more, you know, I thought it'd be a comedy. It's so much more simple little action crime drama where they've plopped a funny
mm-hmm. and let him guy. Do his thing.
Yeah. And let him play this out his way. And I thought, like, it bears more like the producers were Bruckheimer and Simpson. Mm-hmm. Who, you know, Bruckheimer and Simpson went on to do The Rock. And I was thinking a lot about their relationship to comedy via action, because The Rock is loaded with that shit. And I don't know if it's that's them specifically, but it's very definitive. Like, mm-hmm. it feels very specific to them. And of course they hired Tony Scott to do mm-hmm. Beverly Hills Cop 2, even though I assume that movie's not very good, but it makes total sense to me because he's like right in the same headspace.
Right now I'd watch the hell out of Beverly Hills Cop
2. I would too. But it's also the other thing
Bridget
is
Nielsen, right? Is that that one?
I don't remember. The other thing is it's Martin Brest, who mm-hmm. also did Midnight Run, which has the identical tone, which mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. This is so funny. I remember thinking about Midnight Run. My mom described it as one of the funniest films she'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I watched it and I was like, as a kid, I was like, huh? But then I watched it like as a grown up and I was like, I totally 100% get this. Yeah, but it's comedy by way of character, mm-hmm. which is so funny and such a strange thing that I don't think you ever see anymore.
No.
The closest thing people would probably say is The Nice Guys, but like that's way more comedic and slapsticky and
And also that's Shane Black being as funny as the actors. In this, right. The script's not very funny.
Right.
The acting is very, very funny.
And just by being natural, by being true and normal. There like the scenarios are a little bit funny that Axel Foley creates. Mm-hmm. Like he puts a fucking he puts bananas in a tailpipe.
And you grant it, and it's great.
It's very bizarre that he's doing that. And that scene is more, I liked better how he got the bananas.
I kind of don't think it's a great script. it's very simple.
It's not much.
Yeah, it's not.
It's certainly not an intriguing crime story.
Here's an example of why I think it's a questionable script in certain ways. So the movie wants to do two things at one time. It's trying to conserve space. So character-wise, what it wants to do here is it wants to have Axel Foley take Taggart and Judge Reinhold and take them to somewhere scandalous and while they're on duty and have them drink and just, you know, loosen up, stop being so straight laced. Let's get to know each other a little bit. And also the movie wants to accomplish the goal of showing the pair that Axel Foley is a very, very good cop. Okay. So what happens? So that's the two goals you have to accomplish, right? Kaelin's smiling because he knows.
I know what that scene is, but then I have more to say, but okay. Keep telling that scene.
Okay, so he takes him to a strip club, and Taggart's very straight-laced, and he's like, "This, we're going to drink soda water," and Judge Reinhold is like 8 years old, basically. He's never been in a strip club.
He's a fucking child.
He's a child. He plays it like he's a child, and wide-eyed and innocent. And
he plays it, remember the scene in Fast Times where he pulls a gun on the robber.
Yeah.
That's him as a cop. Yeah, literally.
That's right.
It's the exact same.
It's so true. That's so true.
It's really
delightful. So Eddie Murphy has this fucking magnificent monologue about how if you're on duty, you can't get your dick hard and all this stuff. It's funny. It's just Eddie Murphy being Eddie Murphy and almost certainly just riffing. Almost certainly.
Oh, yeah.
And then these two guys in trench coats walk in to the strip club. And Eddie Murphy gets serious, which is actually an amazing acting moment, I would argue. And
he's amazing.
And he basically says, okay, these guys are going to try to rob the place. It's a fully packed strip club, and these guys walk in trench coats with sawed-off shotguns, basically. Eddie Murphy goes over, acts like he's drunk, and disarms the first guy, and Taggart goes, disarms the second guy. Putting those two things together, the two things I said the movie had to do into one scene, is a really silly decision and shouldn't have worked. But I thought it's fine. Like, you grant it because Eddie Murphy.
You grant it. And you know what else? The other funny thing that I was thinking while you started that indicates to me it's not a very good script, and in some ways, kind of a sloppy movie, is like that scene Travis just described. It's fine. You watch it and you're like, okay, fine. But it's certainly not memorable. Certainly not memorable in comparison to many other scenes that Eddie Murphy is in. And yet the tag of the film is like, this is going to take a minute to explain, but like Eddie Murphy solved the case. The two cops who are now his friends have been ordered to drive him out of town, or at least escort him out of town in two cars. And so they're like, okay. And Eddie Murphy's like, well, you know, I was hoping I could get a drink on my way out of town. And the guys are like, oh, I don't know, Axel. And then Judge Reinhold's like, well, I could use a drink. And they're like, well, okay, I guess we'll go get a drink with you. And he's like, okay, cool. And they're like, where do you want to go? And he goes, I know a place. Trust me. And freeze frame. And what he's referring to is, and I really had to think about it, even when I was watching the movie, is like, wait, he means he's going to take them to a strip club? That's the joke?
I don't think that's the joke.
You don't think that's the joke?
No. It's a callback to that because he took them somewhere. Basically, he says, trust me, and they end up at a strip club. The joke there is like, he's going to take him somewhere wild that you don't see. It's not
the
strip club.
But it's remembering this. Yeah, it's drawing a line back to the strip club. And I thought to myself, this movie, when they made it, they had no idea what was classic about it. Because mm-hmm. the structure of it says, that great scene that you remember, like that wild time's about to happen again. And I'm like, that time sucked. Like, there were all these other better times in the movie, but they didn't really know that.
I just thought it was a character beat of
it's just a bad way.
You're
to end
with
the movie.
Me now. I agree with you. It's a dumb terrible ending. It's a groaner ending for sure. But I think it's more the idea there is more
he's going to take them, and he's...
I know, well, I'm not disagreeing with the idea. That's certainly the idea. It's just a, it's just like there are a million other things that you could have referenced as the great parts of the movie.
Yeah.
And they pick a dud as a thing that was like, remember that great part? And everyone's like, no, that part wasn't great. That part was dumb.
Yeah. It's the clunkiest scene in the film because they're just doing movie stuff, exposition. Yeah. And it's not very good. I thought everything else was pretty good about it.
Yeah. It just, it ends in a sort of a limp gunfight is the only thing. In the ending, I was like, oh,
Eddie Murphy shoots Mike Ehrmantraut.
This gunfight's pretty dumb. And if I have to say, if there's one thing I wasn't convinced of, it's Eddie Murphy shooting guns. And I don't think it's necessarily his fault exactly, but he gets a little too into it and the shots are dumb. Like, it's not a very well shot gunfight.
I agree with that. Also, so it's a comedy in certain ways, since Kalen has elucidated. But the movie does spend time sometimes doing physical comedy with not Eddie Murphy, and I find it a little questionable. Like, at one point, Judge Reinhold and Taggart have to get over a wall, and it's this pretty protracted thing where, like, Judge Reinhold's helping
her
up.
I truly didn't understand this moment.
It's really weird because it's straight up going for laughs. It's straight up comedy beat. And he, you know, hoists this bigger guy up and he grabs the wall but can't quite pull himself over, and Judge Reinhold's trying to push him up and he ends up on his shoulders, and then they're kind of walking around with Taggart on Judge Reinhold's shoulders, and like there's a tree, he falls over. It's longer than I'm even making it.
It's very bad.
And it's not funny. And I just think, what are you
Well, that's doing? Every time the movie goes out of its way to do something that a comedy would do, it fails. Like there's that the next part, also in this ending, I forget the line, and this sucks. If we'd done this a week ago, I could have remembered it. But like, Judge Reinhold stands up in the middle of a gunfight and he goes like, "You're all under arrest." Mm-hmm. And then they shoot at him because like they're in a gunfight and he's not protected and they have machine guns. And then he ducks down and he's like, "Ooh." And then his partner Taggart's like, you know, Judge Reinhold.
He does it four times. Like he does it over and over again. And then Taggart says,
he goes like, "Judge Reinhold, if you ever do that again, I'll kick your ass," or something. Or like, it's nothing. But like the joke is supposed to be there. It just sucks.
Tell the tag that joke closes.
Well, then all the other, I don't want.
Just do it.
All the other cops show up finally, and they.
And he gets
and
to
then he
say
gets to
the
stand
line.
Up and say, "You're all under arrest." It is.
That's how the joke ends.
And then he goes like, "Nice work, Judge Reinhold."
Yep.
It's dumb.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
That's the full joke. He's told the full joke now. Yeah. Yeah, I want to watch Raw and Delirious, and you've seen those, so you know the characters I'm talking about.
Well, no, I mean, I've seen them, but a million years ago. I mean, in like middle school, we rented them or something, and I don't remember
any
thing.
I will say this.
I haven't watched them again because it became very clear very quickly that, like, we probably shouldn't watch these.
Yeah, they're problematic.
Yeah.
I will say that, listeners, any voice you remember or character you remember from those stand-up specials, I can almost promise you they're in Beverly Hills Cop. Like any strange funny voice or strange funny characters that you remember him doing, they just show up in this movie. And it's not like he's working them in, which is kind of miraculous.
Yeah.
And so they had to just say, "Well, how would you handle this, Eddie Murphy?" It's like,
Love to know how they constructed this.
I'm kind of curious. Because here's what we've discovered in this conversation, and I think we agree on this 100%, which is the bones of the movie are pretty dumb and pretty shitty in
a lot
of ways.
They're just very spare and simple.
Yeah. And which is fine. That sounds like a compliment. That's true. But there's also parts of it that are shoddy, I would say.
You know what movie this is like?
I don't know.
What movie this is probably, this is kind of exactly like, and which I wonder, honestly, if it was sort of modeled on Beverly Hills Cop? Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. At least that's about pets. But it's a similarly stupid nothing mystery that just gives him an excuse to go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Beverly Hills, the difference is Eddie Murphy doesn't go crazy. He just plays it extraordinarily naturally as a great actor, and it's very funny, and he brings his genius to certain scenes where they feel appropriate. And Jim Carrey is going all ballistic. But both are entertaining in their own way. But
yeah, I kind of buy that.
It feels similar to me. It's funny that they would both introduce those comedic talents in crime mysteries.
Yeah, it's a place for them to show off what all the stuff they can do.
Is it? I wonder. Yeah.
There's a moment that's really, I think, indicative of this in Beverly Hills Cop. So And one of the hallmarks of this character is that he's so confident in his own detecting abilities that he doesn't hesitate to walk into situations. He'll walk into dangerous situations with no sense of how he's going to get out of it. He just goes in and he sorts it out. And it's awesome to see his brain work live. And you're really seeing Eddie Murphy, because he's such a great actor, work it out. And there's this one scene where he breaks in. So one of the plot ideas is that the main bad guy has a ships in drugs from overseas. And they put him in a customs holding thing. They sneak him out of customs. They get the drugs out. They put the boxes back in customs. So the idea is that in this customs area is where the shenanigans are happening. And so Eddie Murphy breaks into this customs thing. And we see the security guard. And it's shot really cleverly, I think. Because you see a security guard walking. And Eddie Murphy, instead of sneaking around like most cops would do, just starts walking up to him. Right. And it's shot in this really great way where for about 8 seconds of a held shot, all the security guard has to do is turn to the right and he'll see Eddie Murphy. And as an audience member, you're like, fuck, what's he going to do if this guy turns? And it lets you build that suspense and that tension. And so finally, Eddie Murphy goes up to him. And he's like, hey, let me see your badge. And, you know, he just takes charge and basically says he's a customs inspector and takes over this whole thing with his personality. That shot, I remember thinking, is so smart.
It really does. Yes, it is smart. And it's a great, and that is a great scene and a really funny part. And to see him play it is great. But it does. This movie sort of defines that thing where people sometimes describe a comedy or any movie as just putting an actor in a situation. And it is so organic and real that somehow this movie, which is, you know, Jerry Bruckheimer, Don Simpson'd out, it's an action police movie, comedy, but it feels like this guy walked into that space and he did this thing. Like there's something that almost, it's beyond script. It's beyond filmmaking. Right. It just suddenly becomes reality, and it feels like this guy Axel Foley, as portrayed by Eddie Murphy, is just alive and real, and you're getting the privilege of watching him handle the world in this very unique and extraordinary way.
He's got a superpower, and it's a superpower that's extraordinarily fun to watch. But it's a superpower that's
completely believable. Yeah. It never feels forced or fake.
I completely agree. I was really happy. I kind of wish this is a movie we would have watched together, honestly.
It would have been really fun. It would have been fun. Absolutely.
Just because it's one where I was laughing out loud, and there's something weird about laughing out loud by yourself, but it was fine.
I have no problem with it.
Yeah. All right.
That's it.
Great. I don't think we should belabor it. Go fucking watch Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
I'm sad you hadn't seen it really a lot before, but I'm really happy you got a chance to see it now.
Yeah,
now
me too.
You're way into Eddie Murphy town now. And
I really am. It's a weird thing to discover an actor. Discover, that's the wrong word. But to find this much appreciation in an actor that you know doesn't deliver. I feel weird about that now.
Yeah.
Because there are five or six fantastic, great Eddie Murphy movies. And that's it. And he's made 40, 30, you know, like it's weird. It's a strange thing to be like, wow, that talent just didn't quite
work out.
I don't know what it is. And I mean, we could talk a lot about Eddie Murphy as a guy. I know he's odd, you know, fame probably got to him in a certain way, but well, like
he was famous too early.
Happened too early. But man, oh man, it's really quite a record of what a movie star feels like when they show up and they're just fucking born a movie star. They're just born to do this.
Yeah. I have one other thing I wanted to talk about, and I'm glad I remembered, because there's another famous thing about this film that got mentioned earlier tonight, which is the famous soundtrack score. And I want to say two things about this. One, you guys know, the song's called Axel F, and it's famous. I won't sing it for you, but you know it for sure.
Well, it goes do do do.
I was hoping to avoid this exact moment.
But I mean, like they need now. They know it. Now they
you for sure knew it already. But I'm glad to hear that.
I didn't. I couldn't have remembered it.
Are you serious?
I know it. Of course, I know it. But I couldn't. Sitting there, I wouldn't have been like, oh, I can pull it. I know. I would have known. I know.
It doesn't matter. I love it's everywhere in the film. I mean, they use that theme to score almost every scene in the film, and every time they use it, I love it.
Yeah.
Point two of this, the other times they score scenes with other tracks are across the board terrible. It's a synth score that's like not that song, and it's all the bad parts of the 80s. It's just synthed out. And it's dumb and terrible. So when that song is not used, the score is atrocious. And when it is, it's exquisite. Just want
to
say that.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to watch Beverly Hills Cop 2 and Beverly Hills Cop 3, I guess. But I but I would be watching them knowing they can't be good. I'd be most interested to see how you can't capture lightning in a bottle twice. Like, yeah. That's basically what I'd be looking for, is like, how does this perfect film go wrong? And I'm just assuming it does.
Well, I think you're right. I think part of it is that the joy of discovering Eddie Murphy is in this movie. And secondly,
for himself too, perhaps.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that. And secondly, I think it's like the first album of a band is really great, 'cause they've spent a whole life writing that album. And the second one's sometimes subpar. A lot of the things that you know Eddie Murphy to do
also
are in this
like
film.
Ace Ventura 2.
Yeah.
Just doesn't work.
When Nature
Not
Calls.
The same.
Is that right?
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, but I bet it fails because I think he's throwing all his shtick out here. Not that it plays a shtick, but it's his shtick that he does. And it's been refined and developed over his comedy tours, stand-up comedy, all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right. I'm very interested in the idea of a movie star not quite understanding what makes them great and then trying to do it again or playing to it. I wonder if that's what happens. I wonder if that's what happened to Eddie Murphy in general, is that he lost the ability to be this natural because his natural became a different thing.
I will go with... effortless and comfortable as adjectives to wrap this up. I still racially charge things aside. I stand by charismatic too.
And listen, let me be clear. I never thought that was a wrong word. It just suddenly I was reminded of that incident and that feeling and being like, Eddie Murphy was somebody who there was an atmosphere around of this guy has been anointed into the world of acceptability at a time when that was a loaded charge thing to do.
Yeah, he did it.
Are you kidding me?
All right, we have someone watching this podcast whose phone just rang on air.
God, get out. Get out now.
Good podcasting. As always, professionals. You know what? You know why that happened? This was going too smoothly and sort of too professionally, I feel like, and something had to disrupt it.
Yeah. Anyway, too professional.
Anyway, Fish was great.
We're going to open up the next episode talking about Fish. That's one reason to tune in. The other is that we'll be watching...
Pulling a bag.
The film.
Pulling a movie out of the bag.
That is called...
I got two. Put this one back.
No, only one.
Oh. Here's my prediction before I say this.
Okay.
I bet I'm fucking super pumped and you're like, okay.
Okay.
It's a sequel.
Okay.
Breaking Two... Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, I'm in.
You in?
I'm so in. Canon Films. I'm so down.
All right. This is going to be a real good one. I want to talk about Fish and Breakin' next week on
Does Your Favorite Movie Is That?